everybody. We are back again. We are doing part two on Out of Character of Cotton's review of the new D&D rules. So, Cotton, where did you leave off?
I believe I left off somewhere around the discussions about, I think we finished up Paladins and Druids and some of the changes and some of the philosophy that they, or problems they had encountered, what they're thinking. And again, it's not all nailed down. Those are some hard classes, you know, and to me, it was an interesting issue of the Druid, right? With specifically Wild Shape, where it's like, you can't make everyone happy. You're kind of trapped between, we're going to either make it simple or we're going to make it complex. So I think we got there-ish in my litany of notes. So, where we left off was the exciting world of changes to our core martial classes, the Barbarian and the Fighter. There's some stuff coming. Really, they're just getting new cool stuff. It's, I guess you could call it buffs. Mostly, it's just really cool options. And what's frustrating is, I invented this mechanic in my own head, where it is worth nothing. So, they're trying to make fighter, well, they're trying to make weapons actually matter. So, if like right now, you get a longsword, it's a D8. It's just damage, right? I mean, I guess you could say it has slashing damage, but nobody cares. So, what they're trying to do is give our fighting classes, you know, our barbarians, and especially our fighters, something called weapon mastery. Where, like, each weapon has this sort of hidden variable, where if you are a master of that weapon, and I don't mean proficient, which is like, I can kind of sort of use it, but like a weapons master, which is your fighter and your barbarians, they can unlock a hidden aspect of that weapon. All right? So your bard with their rapier, it's a D6 or a D8 or whatever the fuck it is. I guess it's a D8. And that's fine, good for you, but say your axe is going to have cleave. It's going to hit someone, and it's going to hit the guy next to that person. Or you could have a weapon with, I believe, nick. Or even if you miss, it still hits them a little bit. Which is kind of a take on the issue raised by, was it Matt? Not Matt Mercer. God damn it. Matt Colville. Where he hates the null turn, a turn where, like, we're going to attack and you do nothing and that's it, get wrecked. I think they're trying to, it's been recognized that that's not great. So weapons with nick will just straight up do damage.
Like, all right, I don't like that, but okay.
You do more if you hit, but you get a little bit of like, I don't know, they've had it before with things like.
You know what it is? It's a participation badge. I'm sorry. I don't like the fact that when I roll badly and I didn't hit anything. My turn's over. All right. We'll make it so even if you miss, you still hit. Does that make any sense at all in your brain?
Well, it doesn't necessarily hit as so much as it does some damage.
You still do something. Make them feel better because heaven forbid somebody feel like they're ineffectual at any point in time.
I think you have some issues on this. I feel like something happened.
Okay.
I mean, God forbid, hey, look, I've taken my L's on issues on this fucking channel, so we're just gonna
have to... I'm taking my L's.
So, you know, goose and gander. All right. So,
all right, no, you think I have issues, I have strong opinions on it, and that's it.
I like the fighter is someone who is going to hit you a little bit, right? They may miss you with the full shot, but they can adjust at the last second and pop you for like 1, 2, 3, or 4 damage. I also kind of like narratively that like killing someone, like it's very often the fighter is kind of like your auto hit class until it's not. So someone, you know, some enemy is at like 3 HP. Whoever touches them is going to get that kill. I kind of like that the fighter's like, they're the go-to. They're the Joe DiMaggio. They're going to get the hit. They're going to get on base. They may not hit a home run, but goddamn it, they're getting they're making contact. They're always there, popping something. I'm kind of okay with a small amount of sort of residual damage. The same thing with like Retribution Aura in World of Warcraft. You know, like if you hit me, you will take 4 damage back. That's kind of cool. It's a similar thing. It's a little chip damage. It's I think a term that has been used. So yeah, but that's cool. They're gonna have things like, I think hammers will get like a knockback effect that can stack with like one of the new subclasses for barbarians we'll get into that also has knockback effect. So I think it's cool that as a fighter, your weapon matters a lot more than any other class narratively. Okay, like, yeah, the warlock has a dagger. But that's not their identity, right? It's Eldritch Blast. You sold your soul for a D10 cantrip. That's what you did. But like the fighter, their sword, their axe, their hammer, I feel like that's more important to that character than in any other class. So wait, where do you kind of pick up what I'm putting down? Is that bullshit? Where are we at?
No, I mean, if that's how you feel and you're like, oh, I think it makes sense and it works, then, and you're happy, okay.
I think it's a cool thing.
You're not going to change my mind, but okay.
Well, beyond the Nick participation trophy damage, as a character, like Wild Shape defines the druid. Like, that's the thing the druid do. Mm-hmm. A fighter, like when someone chooses a fighter, it's cool when they, like, get the weapon. Like, to me, that's an important part. This is their instrument, okay? This is their piccolo for the bard. This is their magic wand for the wizard. And I think they should have more shit there, too, by the way. But, you know, whatever. But it's cool that, like, you're this fighter with a hammer and you're physically knocking people back. Or you have a giant axe and you're cleaving through motherfuckers. You know, that's cool. I just think that's a really cool new change to make weapons matter. I'm a gear nerd. I love nerding out over my gear. I do not like that the entire weapons table is just a series of dice. That's the only thing that differentiates 90% of the weapons. There's a few things like whips and chains, but they don't like do shit. They're not great. There's a few. I won't lie. There's some things like, oh, you can trip with this, or this has some weird, you know, rule on, but mostly it's just dice. It's like, this weapon does X dice. This weapon does X dice. So there's really only like four weapons in the whole caboodle, right? There's like single-handed simple weapon, double-handed simple weapon, single-handed martial weapon, double-handed martial weapon, and that's four. And there's about six weapons. It's like rapier, longsword, like battle axe, quarterstaff. That's about it right now. Dagger. And this will expand that to let you have a way of, like, this is who my character is. My character swings an axe and just slices through multiple people. My character just fucking, like, brings the hammer down or brings it up and, like, knocks somebody up like a golf club. Cling. I think that's cool. So, yeah, Barbarians and Fighters, it looks like they'll be getting this as a new option.
Okay, Sakara is listening, and he is talking about it shouldn't be attached to the class. It should be attached to a weapon.
It is attached to the weapon. It's all the weapons have it, but if you're not, like, so damn skilled with this weapon, you don't get to unlock it. So for someone who can...
Oh, it should be attached to class. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It kind of both. Now, finders even gain more. They can mix and match these attributes. They're so skilled that they can take their axe and make it into a knockback weapon. Narratively, you could say they turn the blade flat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool. I love the idea of fighters being all about, because they get all these proficiencies. I love that. I love the idea of the fighter being this John Wick character who grabs any and everything and makes it into a weapon. It actually is one of the subclasses they're getting, which is this, like, brawler class. Like, it's the opposite of the battle master. They can just get, like, improvised weapons and start going to work on people. You know, grab a brick, grab a broom handle, get a chair, piece of glass, whatever it fucking takes, get in there and just start stabbing people, beating them to death. That's awesome as shit. I think that's kind of where this weapon thing is kind of trying to be, where it's narrative and mechanical, and that's cool. I'm down with that.
All right, so to be a weapons master, like you're saying, what level do you achieve that at?
Let's see. I don't have the documentation. It's not a subclass. It's not like a, it's just a thing fighters kind of like get. So
at the get-go, right out the gate, level one?
Not level one, but like it won't be tied to a subclass. Like as you level up as a fight, like, you know, like there's your subclass and then there's your main class and the main class still gets stuff, but your subclass will have those features that get unlocked as you level up. So let's see. Wow. Barbarians get it at level one. So yeah, fuck me. I'm guessing in fighters, it's a more of a thing with fighters. So, like weapon mastery, your training with weapons allows you to use the mastery property of two kinds of simple or martial melee weapons of your choice, such as great axes and hand axes. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can practice weapon drills and change one of those weapon choices. When you reach certain levels in the class, you gain the ability to use mastery properties of more kinds of weapons as shown in the table. So, like, yeah, out the gate, you get two weapon masteries as a barbarian, and you can change one every long rest. And that's the barbarian, and it's even more profound with the fighter. They get to take weapon masteries off of weapons and put them on others. They can add cleave to their dagger or like knock back to the whatever the fuck. They're doing wild shit. So that's going to be a big new choice of a fighter, is what weapon you pick will now actually matter, not only mechanically, but in a way that is focused on the narrative, like how your class is perceived. Because I've never liked how it's like sword and board is, here's your shield, here's your longsword. Why longsword? Because it does the most damage, and if you have to in a pinch, you can use it two-handed and does more damage, and that's it. It's versatile. Okay, but I want to use a hammer, because hammers are cool. Yeah, but they're not as good. Oh. I want to use an axe. I'm a dwarf. Axe. No. Longsword. Now it's kind of...
I want to use an axe. They can use an axe. They don't have to take the best option. They can take whatever option.
Okay. That's...
that's how we play the game differently. So when you have... All right, so we always had this issue, and they're talking about it in the chat, Oz and Zakar now, about, well, you know, now I just have to take fighter, and then, you know, multi-class, I'll just take one in fighter, get access to this, switch over to something else, and boom. It doesn't deter that. If anything, it invites more.
There is some amount of, that's even true now, where you have to have certain stats. To, like, you have to have a certain strength or dex score, I believe, to go into fighter. Not a huge restriction, to be honest. But here is the solution. Ban multiclassing. All right, everybody, we solved it. Just stop.
Is that in the new documents? Are they banning multiclassing?
It's called Rule Zero in the DM book. Just, you can fix so many problems. But you're right. I think that that's... To me, multiclassing is fundamentally broken. It is a fundamental... So, yeah, to the extent anyone's counter-argument to any change is multiclassing breaks this, it's not... I mean, I'll be honest, not to be shitty, it's not worth, frankly, anyone's time to try to figure out why that's not true, because multiclassing is already broken. It's already dumb.
Yeah.
People already dip into fighter to get action surge, although that's being changed a little to be less stupid. Like, you have to use like an attack action. You can't just use it for like more spell casting or more bullshit. But that's not the real, that's a band-aid. The problem is multiclassing. The problem is they want to make a game with lots of features and subclasses and cool abilities. And that's great. Do that. But then they have this thing called multiclassing, which has been around forever, and they're not allowed to kill it. You know, it's like, you can't kill Superman. He will be back. Well, you can't. So just, there you go. Multiclassing is stupid as shit. It is one of the dumbest things about D&D, and they need to get rid of it, but they won't. There you go.
They won't get rid of it, and all they're doing is inviting more of it, and it might make players happy, but it's not going to make GMs happy.
I mean, if you're an unhappy GM...
You can't just say at a table, by the way, I don't allow multiclassing, because... Well, you just ripped out a big piece of it that's attractive to players. So
I have literally done it. I mean, to be honest, I didn't outright ban it, but I was 99%. I said I am not allowing multiclassing unless you have a damn good reason and it's not stupid. So, like, you're not doing too, if you want to like have a narrative cool reason you're doing something, and it's not some busted bullshit. Like, if you make a build I've heard of, I'm not going to let you do it. I don't like the idea of the Paladin Warlock narratively. And even in a world where I'm going to expand my mind a bit and be cool with it, it's a Hexadin. It's a build name. If it has a build name, you can't do it at my table. So Coffee Lock is not a thing. You cannot multiclass Sorcerer and Warlock at my table. You just can't. Mm-hmm. It's not a thing that's going to happen. You cannot multiclass Paladin and Warlock at my table. Not allowed to happen. There you go. You know, it's a pretty simple patch that... brings very little negative to a game and brings a lot of negative out. Anyway, I don't want to get too bogged down in multiclassing. We can all agree that multiclassing bad.
Okay.
Let's see what we got next. They are heavily changing the warlock. So from now on, they're going to have like their known spells and prepared spells per long rest. They're trying to stop some of the multiclassing bullshit, and they're trying to simplify some of the things in the class. That's great. they're going to have, they were going to have this thing with like wizards where they could like make their own spells. But as I was reading it through the playtest document, I'm like, man, that's so cool, but it feels super fucking broken. And then like I kept going. I got the new playtest stuff and it was like, yeah, we nixed it immediately. It was just super busted. You could like make your own spells up and copy those spells into a spell book and have it. I appreciate that, but like, no, right? it was not good.
Okay.
This is a game that is not like there are some games like Capers, which we played, where there is kind of a customization on spells and abilities. Like they give you a general layout and let you kind of like build your own stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've seen some superhero RPGs with that as a mechanic. D&D has simply gone too far in the opposite direction, which is defining everything. Like, this is the spell, this is what it does, and here we go. They need to stick with that. Anything where it's like, we're going to like customize the spell, this gets weird with the rules. It went against, I think they said this, it went against what they were trying to do with a lot of the rules, which is make them more formulaic, with more structured language, with like defined terms. So yeah, that was a cool idea, but it came and went. So sorry about making up new spells. Let's see. Other than that, Wizards didn't seem to get a whole lot of change, which I think is fine. I feel like Wizards is in a decent spot. Twin Spell is a sorcerer ability. It's a meta magic thing where they got to take a spell and cast it twice. It's super busted, and it and so as you're going through the playtest data, you see them try to like fix it. One fix was like, you now get to cast the same spell back to back, but the second time you cast it, which is a round later, by the way, it's like cheaper to cast. This was trash. Now it just lets you upcast a spell that has a number of targets by one level. So like you have a spell that says, oh, this does this affects two people, and if you upcast it at a higher level, it affects one more person per level. Now Twin Spell just adds that plus one. So it's already like grooves. It dovetails into a mechanic that's already there. Where like, hey, I have a second level spell and I can cast it at third level. But instead of using my third level spot, I'm just going to use this one cheap meta magic point to kind of amp up that one aspect of the spell. This feels like a small ball change, not worth mentioning. But if you play a sorcerer, that spell was super. It was, or that ability was super busted. The ability to like cast two spells off of a banish, which also banish was nerfed, but was like crazy busted. It also get messy with concentration rules because now I've cast a spell, and it's twinned. Okay, but I have a concentration, and you can only have concentration on one spell at a time. So do I have two concentrations running concurrently, or do I have one concentration that affects both? How many saves do I need to roll there for? It was they just got rid of all that horseshit. In one fell swoop, in what I felt was a mostly decent way. So small ball change, but I like it. Let's see. The monk. The monk got hit by the PC police a little bit. We no longer have Key. Key is out. Now we have martial discipline. How do you feel about that, Jupiter?
What's martial discipline?
It's Key. But it's not Asian-y. it's just you know, because they're trying to make the monk, okay, not some Jackie Chan shit, okay? They're trying to make the monk not have, like, okay, if someone's a fighter, what does a fighter look like? Well, it could be anything. It could be anyone from any time and place. Monks kind of have this very odd, like, Chinese Kung Fu master vibe. And they're trying to make it more of that style of fighter than, say, the Kung Fu Master. So now Ki, which has this sort of like baggage to it, that's gone. Now it's a generic term, like martial discipline, which is an inelegant word. It's inelegant.
Removed a lot of like flavor of the monk. I didn't have an issue with the Ki. I had a monk in a game and everything was fine. It wasn't difficult to manage the key, and I didn't have an issue.
Well, it's just now called something different. You still have it. It's just not key. Right. It's martial discipline.
That's just, you just remove some flavor.
Yeah, we have to get that flavor out of there. That flavor was we have to get rid of the offensive flavor. Now it's like
how is
soup.
It offensive?
It's appropriative. It's appropriative.
It's appropriative.
And maybe you don't want your muck to be like. I frankly, if they could rename the class, I feel like they would. Like they want someone who is like a physical, dexterous based, you know, martial arts badass type of character, which is often your monk or ninja or whatever the fuck. But they're kind of like locked into monk now, but they got rid of Ki. So now it's gonna be. It's a weird vibe they're trying to navigate is what I would say. But yeah, now they have dexterous attacks, so they are going to be replacing, like, you can replace strength with your dex modifier. Bonus on arm strike is no longer tied to the attack action. Before you had to, like, I attack, and now I use my bonus action. Now you don't, like, have to do that. You can kind of get that extra shot in from the corner. It's a little minor buff. I mean, just going through the monk, it's kind of just a bunch of small buffs. Like, I've gone through this thing. And they were going to get weapon mastery, but that was cut out. But it's a lot of little, like, tiny things where they get a few more of their discipline points, you know, Ki. Damage gets buffed here and there. Get a little bit more of their martial discipline points remaining. Like, they have ways to keep them going as opposed to being running out of gas so fast. Not a lot of super interesting stuff. They're making it better. So if you wanted to play a monk, it's a common thought at this moment that monks are one of the weakest classes in D&D. They just don't have the oomph, right? They have lots of cool abilities. There's lots of cool stuff there, lots of flavor there, lots of utility. It's just, like, not good. It's just, they just didn't have enough of the thing. So their way of tuning that up for the D&D 1 is just kind of crank all levers, right? Let's see. After that, we kind of got into some more generic stuff. Let's see. They've got a new barbarian subclass called Path of the Zealot, which is pretty cool. I think that's a neat thing. So they're trying to give this new, like, you've got your totem warrior barbarian, where they're like of different animal spirits, although they are nerfing bear. The whole, like, bear reduces all the damage by half. They're like, yeah, that's bullshit. And it was. But it was like a broken thing that made it playable. So now it's like you choose two of your favorite damage types to resist, but it buffs the other ones. Like there was the bear spirit, the wolf, the eagle, the tiger, I want to say. Those are going to get buffed up. Things like mobility, things like, I think, like general attack or like helping your team become more mobile. They're going to fix Path of the Berserker to where it's not absolute trash. Right now, Path of the Berserker was like the attacky barbarian, like your ragey barbarian, but it, when you raged or when you did frenzy, you got like an exhaustion level, which is utter trash. That's out. Path of the World Tree Barbarian. You tap into the power of the multi-planar world tree. I like this flavor. You can use the roots of the tree to pull people to you, allies and enemies, or throw them away. So this is a cool vibe. This feels like the first time there's going to be a barbarian that can affect the battlefield. You know, I don't feel like they're going to be as utilitarian as your battle master. They'll probably have more raw damage than the battle master, but this allows them to affect the space in a cool way. Grabbing, deflecting, you know, some of this generic utility, or not just generic, but like, you know, utility over raw power while they have other flavors of raw power. They have the Path of the Zealot, Path of the Berserker. These feel like the get in your face barbarian. The totem one is more of the animal nature, spirit, animism, old school, like almost druidic relationship with nature, where you're like you're getting your animal spirit power in, cool. And then you have this world tree, which is even more ethereal in a nature sense, and affecting the battlefield in a more complex way. I'm glad the barbarian is here. I'm glad we kind of have a get in your face and beat the shit out of them class. I'm also glad it has at least one subclass that is going to be a step up in complexity. You know.
Okay.
I don't think any one class should have an ownership of the noob class, and Barbarian has felt that way. It has felt like this is the class if you do not know how to play D&D. You know, they go forth and they attack with weapon. So at least now they have a little bit more option beyond that.
I always considered fighter to be that one. If you don't know how to play D&D, just be a fighter.
in the past, definitely true. There is the champion fighter right now, and that's also true for that. The two are like a barbarian anything, and then champion fighter. That's the Johnny's first D&D game. The wild magic sorcerer. Hell yes. The wild magic sorcerer has some goofy ass rules where it was like, it can, your wild magic can pop off if like you feel it does, or if the GM kind of, now it just happens on 20s. Your wild magic surge, if you roll a 20, fucking happens. Mm-hmm. They're also getting the thing called Tides of Chaos, which is this ping pong like management of advantage on rolls and force magic surges. It's like it goes back and forth to where like when it happens, it's consumed, but sets itself back up. So it's meant to, I think, make this subclass playable in a way that fits with its narrative. And I really want to play it. Iconic Lineage Sorcerer has always been better. But fuck, I want to play like the Casino Sorcerer. I want to play the sorcerer who's just like popping with magic. And the shit's just going off. Explosions and chaotic magics are happening. There you go. So I'm glad they're trying to like make that thing work. It's one of the coolest ideas of a subclass from vanilla. Very happy that it's going to be like hopefully playable. They're trying, right? They're trying to do the thing. So stoked about that. They're buffing jump. I talked about counterspell. They're buffing jump. Now it's bonus action, can affect more than one person and bumps up jump distance. That sounds like a little small thing, but that's a cool spell. And we've got the long rest. Long rest is getting buffed. Before, it did half your hit die. Does anyone know what a hit die is, by the way? Hit die?
We know what a hit die is.
All right. What is a hit die?
The hit die is the die you roll to increase your hit points.
Okay.
What?
So that's. I don't know if you mean it level up or when you're hurt.
No, when you level up.
Nah. So in D&D, if you do a short rest, you can roll the number of hit die you have and heal that plus your con modifier. So like if you're a barbarian, you have a D12 hit die. You can roll them and you have a number of them equal to your level. This has been like the awkwardest mechanic in D&D. Nobody fucking remembers it. It's a way to heal in between fights. It's a cool mechanic in a lot of ways. The problem is they've kind of gotten away from hit die with things like D&D Beyond. They just tell you what your HP is. It doesn't break down for you that at level 5, you have 5 12-sided dice worth of HP plus, your constitution modifier. So people don't know what a hit die is, at least in my experience with people fairly new to the game. And then on a long rest, you got half of them back. So it was one of the few things to not get fully back on a long rest. Now you get them all back. I am so happy for this change. This sounds so minor, and it mechanically it is. But people were people were weird about their resources. So when you go to someone and it's like, hey, you're down like 20 HP. You're taking a short rest. Do you want to use some of your hit die? What are my hit die? Well, it's like this pool of dice, and you roll them, and you can heal for free. Some of your HP, no spell slots, but you only get half back when you long rest. That is the extra bit of complexity and the fear of loss. Like, oh, so I can do a long rest and I get all my HP back, but I don't get all my hit die back. Oh man. Oh, and they start sweating it. Mm-hmm. I get it. They were trying to add in the mechanic to show that like, characters can't just go get the shit beat out of them all the time. The game is already highly player friendly. This only makes it more so, but it's just worth it. It's just worth it to not have to have that fucking conversation about, oh, well, I've used 4 hit die and I get 2. I get, because I'm level 4, I get 2 of my hit die back on a long rest. Now I have to manage my hit. Like, and nowhere on the character sheet is there like a hit die thing to keep up with this. So they're just saying, screw it. You take a long rest, you get your hit die back. You get your little short rest hit pull back. So the only thing you don't get back is exhaustion, like all your exhaustion levels. And luckily, exhaustion almost never comes up. In fact,
never heard of exhaustion levels ever.
It almost never comes up. The only time it comes up, outside really weird enemies, and they exist, is like a marching campaign. Like, we're not fighting anyone. We have a grueling march through the desert. And so we're going to have exhaustion levels, which is this weird ass mechanic nobody knows. But it's all we're doing right now. We're not really fighting anything. We're just doing exhaustion levels to show that you're getting the crap beat out of you. And like, whenever you do a long rest, you get one exhaustion level back. Because they're so, it's kind of okay. It's almost like an ancillary rule. You can run an entire campaign, never mention the word exhaustion level, and be fine. Mm-hmm. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's an optional rule, but it's so obscure. It's just obscure enough to be basically an optional rule. That's all you don't get back on a long rest. If you take a long rest, everything else, HP, hit die, spell slots, the whole kit and caboodle, you are 100% good to go. And for the power fans of this D&D, that's fine. See? Hit die. No one knows. No one cares. All right. So that was some of the small rinky-dink changes that were left over. Let's see. That leads to one of my new favorite changes. Mm. And what I have spent the majority of tonight brushing up on.
Oh.
Bastions. Oh, yes. Bastions. Now, this will not be a part of the new D&D Player's Handbook, the D&D 1 Player's Handbook. It will be the Dungeon Master Guide. It is an optional rule, but for base building people like me, this is the shit. Oh, it's so good. Have you ever wanted to build your own base inside the D&D world? All right. Fuck. So, you're not going to care.
Grapha has. Grapha likes doing that.
Grapha, he does.
Doing that. That's not why I'm there. Yeah.
Grapha and me very much want to build the base of our operations. Like, that's just how I can feel in him a fellow kindred soul. And I want to build my castle, and I want to find out exactly what metal tips the top of the ballistas that I fire upon my enemies. That is my jam. This doesn't go that far, but it goes almost that far. So, what are bastions in this game? Great. I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you care as deeply as I do. Mm-hmm. So starting at fifth level, if you decide to take up this optional role, you will be able to start your bastion. This is your home base, your operational center. And the way it works is they get to have like downtime activities. This is a place to go for you and your team to hang out. It's a way to incorporate this space that the players have input in into the world that the GM has built. I like this from a narrative storytelling, a collaborative storytelling sense, right? We are going to build in, this is my keep. It's your world that you brought to us. Now it's our world, and now we are putting in this thing, and so now we have a bit of a shared overlap. It allows you to have a thing to interact with as a GM as well, as far as things that happen to it. They can be attacked. You can have hirelings leave. You can have honored guests show up. You can roll dice or just dictate what happens. That's cool. It's a way to kind of, I feel like, sort of stitch something that is the players into the world that more or less existed in the GM's head before those players got there. So are you biting yet? You sold? Bastions?
No.
Fuck. We'll keep going. So, at fifth level, you get like two basics. I'm not going to go way into the nitty-gritty unless you really want to, which is presumably not. But you can, there are basic rooms. They are the bedroom, there are bedrooms, courtyards, dining rooms, kitchens, parlors, storage rooms, and washrooms. At fifth level, you start out with two. One is cramped, one's roomy, and none are vast. Kind of like the generic room sizes, which are 4 squares big, 16 squares big, or 36 squares big. So at the gate, you can have a little house with like a bedroom and a kitchen, and your bedroom could be cramped or, you know, a little 2x2 grid, and then the kitchen roomy, a little 4x4 grid. And over time, you can like spend gold to build this out, more bedrooms and courtyards and parlors and washrooms and all kind of shit. Hell yes. Build your castle, 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 castle. You also get special facilities. These are the things that like actually do something. The other ones are more of like, they're just there for story. They're just there as a gold sink. It's just a cool way to like, again, sow something of the player into the world. Special facilities, however, these are like the shit. Okay. These are like the smithy. Like, let's see what we got in here. They can do cool stuff. You can have like a magic-y library room or something, and like one of the benefits you get is it can cast identify once a day with no materials. I think that's pretty cool. So let's see, and they get hirelings. Each little special facility is like, oh, it makes enough money to pay for its own hirelings. You don't have to go into the hireling pay; that they're just like there. So you can get like an arcane study. You can get an armory, a barracks to help defend it, a workshop, a gaming hall to make money that you can have like people can like gamble there. You can have a laboratory doing research. You can have a stable with horses. You can have a pub and get like gossip. I don't know. I am super stoked about that. I think it's the coolest damn thing ever. So, yeah, it's a way to... And you get, like, once every 7 days, you get to have your Bastion have a Bastion turn, and it generates some Bastion-y points, which can be used on cool shit. Mostly, it's going to be a downtime thing. I think it's going to be the kind of thing you use when you're back in town, and will take up some downtime, both mechanically and narratively, which I do think D&D kind of lacks. Like, what do we do in between kicking all the ass? You know, are we being courtiers? Are we working a job? Like, how, you know, what are we doing in this, in whatever town or hub we're kind of based out of? I think this allows that. There is a few problems, though, for me. Mm-hmm. One is, I just slapped on there that at 100, like, Bastion points, you can, like, resurrect your character if they die. And it doesn't even require, like, a chapel or some weird shit. It's just literally... Your home is so fucking cool and powerful, and you've stored up enough Bastion points that if you die, you can just resurrect within a few days back at your house. That's dumb as shit, I think. Like, it's not narrative at all. It's just like, wow, this guy's got such a kick-ass crib. His like, and he died in like a volcano. He just fucking shows back up. He's back. He's back, everybody. That's not good. D&D is already hard enough to die. We don't need your house to resurrect you in mind, body, and soul for no reason. Let's not do that. No. I also am concerned about multiple players. I think the players having one base is cool. And again, we don't know how OP any of this stuff is. So maybe four or five people stacking all their stuff together in some giant castle or labyrinth or whatever, like, you know, like a compound, won't be too powerful, but it might. I don't know. If they don't do that, if everyone has their own, like, place, that's going to be weird. That's going to be splitting the party. And even though it's in downtime, it just feels even narratively hard to do. Like, it's really cool to have everybody have a castle and then have dynamic NPC engagements. You know, NPCs are kind of, like, often tied to one spot. Now they can stop by. They can knock on the door, and you can have interactions. I like that. But what happens when everyone's in, like, their own private house? And I don't think they'll do that on purpose. I think people will do it without thinking. And now it's like, well, we want the mayor to come by during their downtime and have a conversation about, he wants them to protect the town for on a contract basis. Well, does he go by each house separately? That's not so great. Does he kind of summon everybody out of their houses? Well, then that's a big reason to have the houses or to have these bastions, is that we're going to be meeting in them. We're going to have NPCs coming in and out. We're going to have this place, you know, stitched up and linked to the world. And now I have to pull you out because the mayor's not going to have this conversation five times. That's a little concerning. I would say if you do choose this rule as a GM, encourage the players to either share the space or to have all of their various properties on the same block, at least. Or maybe even sharing, like, one room. Like, if they all have kind of, between all of their build points or whatever the hell it is, maybe have, like, a shared room, kind of like when you have a hotel suite, where it's, like, this hotel room connects to this hotel room. But then, like, you could add a little middle meeting chamber. Well, that's still, like, one big castle. Basically, they need to have one big castle or be really freaking close in order to be able to, like, achieve the narrative goals you're trying with this thing. All right, there. I have tried to sell the Bastion thing. Why do you hate the Sims? Let's play Sim.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. When did this become Second Life? When did this become Sims? Do we just, you know, we're just gonna do Monopoly? We're just gonna build things, and we're just gonna have slice of life, and we don't need to leave the town, or? What are we going to do next? Are we going to run for mayor? Are we going to fix the elections? Are we going to try to, like, you know...
That's a leap.
Create a network of spies? I mean, it's just like...
Yes, the pub allows you to create a network of spies. It's a specific thing in the special room. You get to have a network of spies from your pub that gets you gossip.
And I understand the game needs to be attractive to many people who have different motivations on why they're in here playing the game. I understand it's trying to make sure... It has something for everybody.
I mean, I just feel like some of the coolest moments in games are when you get, like, a building. Like, I will always remember playing GTA Vice City, and, like, you get, like, the mansion that's clearly from Scarface. You know, you get, like, a building. You buy a place. That's your place. And a lot of those things made you money in the game when you weren't there. This does that. I'm kind of into that. And I don't think I'm the only one. I do think there's some narrative stuff here. I do think there's some pitfalls. But yeah, to me, the most fun I'm going to have with my power and money and influence as a character, the way I want to express that, is by impacting the world. I want to build a castle. I want to be a duke. I want to found a church and have worshipers from the city come to it and, like, convert them to the new religion. I want to found a new city in the wilds. I want to, like, change the world from my character. And then, like, they build a statue in bronze of my character. That's where we want to go with this. That's my jam.
Okay.
Oz says Cotton's always about the nobility. He's not wrong. I mean,
you know? Yeah, Oz did say you are about nobility. You want to be a noble in the game. You want to be somebody who is revered. People adulate, and you just want to be, you know, like, king of the castle, everybody bow down.
Yeah, that's, like, why can't I have a thing?
Have a thing. If that's what motivates you,
I get
there
to
you
have
go.
Hirelings.
Oz brings up,
I don't know what they do, but it's great.
Oz has a question. Then why do we need rules to even do this? Why do we need rules? Why can't we just do this? Why do we need actual rules?
You're right. I actually think that's a totally fair question, although it's technically true about anything in D&D, right? Like, why do we need rules to do anything? It's all play pretend. This gives you some structure to achieve that, and it is an optional rule. So D&D exists as play pretend with rules so we can all interact in the same in the same space. I can't just declare that I win. I can throw a punch.
I know you want to do that.
No, I mean, you need a game.
You want
to
just declare,
like,
you win.
I declare that I win. I punch him and it hits him. And that's how that
Yes. Well, I mean, if it doesn't hit him, don't worry. It's still going to hit him.
We have nick damage and we'll graze him. Mm-hmm, and, but yeah, like, yeah. You're right. You very, and you don't have to have rules. We played a game. I played a duke. I got to have a castle. And mm-hmm. It went a lot like this. My biggest thing that I like about this is that it opens the conversation. And so this is like, hey, this is a thing. And a GM might say, well, we'll run like a light version, which is kind of what you did. You didn't have a whole, like, mechanics thing. It was like, hey, this is a building. It's going to be a gold sink for you. Mm-hmm. So you're right. You don't need this. It's there as an optional rule set, which I think is totally fair. It's this, if you're a bunch of, like, base building nerds like me, you have this fully fleshed out nerd system. If you don't have this, it may inspire the players and or GM to decide to have a non-rules-based system where it's just like the GM makes some shit up and you have buildings and they are a way to display power and wealth, but don't have any actual mechanical ability. So yeah,
you still haven't sold me on it. If I'm at a table in a group and, like, you're in there too and you're like, oh, I want to do that. I mean, whatever. Okay. I'll take part. It doesn't make a difference to me either way. It's just not my main goal. It's not my main thing.
Fair enough. That's totally fair. I get it. But we exist. Base building. Base builders
you
unite.
You do. You guys do exist. I mean, and there's, like, I haven't seen, like, literal base building except for when I had you in a game or if I have Greyfet in a game. Oz does a different kind of building. He doesn't necessarily want to build a literal building, but he builds, like, a network. He tries to gain influence. Not so much build a base, but he just tries to build influence in the game.
Well, there you go. And you have handled that in your own ways. Vamps is handling it now in our vampire game.
Yes.
And yeah. Okay, cool. Like, and if someone's not great at that or wants a more formalized system, it exists. I think it would be cool. I mean, hey, there you go. That's how I would ask this. I would ask Oz, how would you feel about there being an entire system that Vamps doesn't have to say right from scratch about what your network could do? It could get you some default money, default magical item, like over time, not anything absurd, but more that it represented the ability of your network to like input into the world and glean back from the world.
He is asking, are you sure? Are you really sure you want him to answer?
Are you sure? Yes. Fuck yeah.
New. New.
I don't know. I like that. I like being able to pull on the chain of the world. Because sometimes as a player, you feel like the world is still the GM's. We call it collaborative storytelling. But really, it's the GM's play box, and we're all kind of in it. It's their stage, and we're the actors.
That's not true. That's not ever, how I look ever. At it at all.
I have felt that way. I have felt that way before. And I feel like this is a formalized way to allow players to grab on to like the game, and they get to affect the play. They get to rewrite some of the script. They're in the world now. The building is there. But again, if your objection is, well, yeah, but I'm so good as a GM, I kind of like rolled with it and figured it out. Great. That's fine. Not everybody is.
Okay. Do we have more to go over? Is there even more to discuss, or is that like the bulk of anything that's worthy of talking about?
That was most of it. They did try to like change up some cantrips, but they weren't super interested, to be quite honest with you. Now, like, they changed True Strike to where it's no longer a complete joke. Like, True Strike, are you aware of like True Strike is the hilarious? So, all right, there's a spell called True Strike. It's a spell and you cast it, and that's your turn. It allows you to make an attack with advantage, but not that turn. It's like the turn is spent casting the spell. It's not like Smite where I'm casting a spell to make this attack do a thing. It says I'm going to cast a spell, and so my next attack will have advantage. That's not any better than just rolling for attack, because if you lose your turn to roll for advantage next time, that's the same as attacking twice, except if you attack twice, you actually have a chance of hitting them twice, right? So it was like a literal joke of a spell.
Okay.
So they did change it. They did. I wanted to bring that up. There was a few like small quality of life improvements on some cantrips. So there it is. Now, you use your spellcasting ability for the attack and damage rolls instead of using strength or dex. So if you're like a sorcerer, you can cast True Strike and bonk somebody with a quarterstaff at first level. I think this is good. I like this. This is like a great first level like spell where you're a sorcerer and you like empower your quarterstaff and just fucking bonk the shit out of somebody. I want to have that. I think it's the best thing ever for first level spellcasters to be bonking people with slightly magical weapons, because it kind of... Normally you just cast magic missile and then you go to your shitty bow or your shitty dagger. This feels better. This is what I would do if I were a first level spellcaster, is I would have like a quarterstaff and I would make it slightly more magical than it was before and like super bonk someone with my brain powers versus my muscle power. That's it. Small quality of life. That's pretty much it. So that is most of the changes that were, to me, worth talking about across two different podcasts. Well, there are some other things I want to bring up. This is speculative. This is me going into like tinfoil hat territory, okay?
Okay.
When you go on to D&D Beyond and you create a character, one of the first things you see, if you create a character in the standard-y way, not some like quick build bullshit, are a list of slider options. Homebrew content has a slider on or off. Magic the Gathering content, Eberron, Non-Core, Dragonlance, Planescape. Okay, so it's a bit awkward and needs to be done better. But I'm envisioning a world in the D&D 1. Like, why are they calling it 1? Why isn't it 6th edition or 5.5? Is it just vanity? At first, I thought it was just like they're trying to do like the Xbox One bullshit, where it's just like a name change. Mm-hmm. I think what they're trying to do is build up a large digital library, fix things that are broken, deprecate things that are kind of sort of not great or that are old, and allow people to have more control over their game. So, and I don't think they have it fully figured out, which is why I don't think they've talked about it. And I think it would be controversial no matter what they do. If they come out and say there is no longer going to be set in stone editions, there is no more actually one D&D. One D&D will be a plethora of options, like a buffet. And your table may have different kits. Those kits may be groupings of content. You may have your new version of the barbarian. Then there's the old version of the barbarian. And you click on which one your table will be using, both in character creation on their integrated D&D Beyond website and in any, what's it called? Whatever Roll20 is, a playing tabletop environment. Yeah, yes.
Tabletop?
A virtual tabletop. I think that's how that will go. And I do think that they will sort of fade things out that they feel are particularly bad. So right now, if you purchased Volos, it's a book, on D&D Beyond, those things are still there, but they're listed as like out, they're like deprecated, they're like not supposed to be used, you have to actively choose them or some shit, and you cannot buy them anymore. So it's clear that they're, to me, they're trying to build it to be this, a game that evolves and has small, regular updates and changes. And if you had old content, you can select it on, like click it on or off. But I think that's where it's going to go. I don't think it's going to be editions. I don't think it's going to be like we publish an edition. I think that books that are physical will largely be a luxury or relic. I don't think they're going to be... I don't think that's their vision of the future of the game in the play of the game is we all pull our books out. I think that's going to be like a cute anachronism type mm-hmm. of thing, a collector's item. The real way to play D&D will be on D&D Beyond with their virtual tabletop for a monthly fee. And still buying the book. You'll buy the books, but you'll buy them digitally. And you'll use a monthly fee to make them even better and to be able to share that content. So that's what I think is where this is going. That's why this is not 6th edition. Also, the change
is called D&D 1. It's called D&D 1 because they are trying to make the game attractive to all kinds of players with all different motivations and what they're looking for in the game. They're opening it up to be the only game you need.
Yeah.
A one game.
And it would not surprise me if they... And then that's tinfoil hat level one. I need you mm-hmm. to strap in for tinfoil hat level two.
Okay.
Hasbro likes money. I feel pretty strongly about this. And I don't think they're stupid. Well, yeah, I do. I do think they're stupid in some very key ways. Mm-hmm. However, if they get this system up and running, their character generation system, it's going to want to expand. And I feel like they know that D&D does what it does really well. And I think they're trying to keep it as the power fantasy, medieval, tabletop, role-playing game. It would not surprise me if they make a game that competes out of that space. And I know I'm a Shadowrun nerd, so I can see it being a cyberpunk game, because they're really like... I feel like that area is rife for expansion from someone mm-hmm. with several million dollars. Mm-hmm. And these products make money. And once they have a system built that can handle character creation, rules changes, once you have that code in place, there's nothing to really stop you from creating, from one, maintaining that in a permanent way and it being a constant moneymaker forever. Mm-hmm. and then kind of being a chilled out, mostly finished product. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if D&D 1 is like, we will slowly be fixing the game here and there, but there will be no more major, like, changes, or there will be new things that you pay for, new artificer, like, classes or subclasses or whatever the shit, but we're not going to have, we're never doing additions again. It's going to be slow DLC updates from now on until the end of time, mm-hmm. and it will be a constant money machine as we slowly add some content and have new players come into the space. No more hand-me-down books. That shit's over. You know?
Yeah. No, I can also see them taking these rules and trying to reskin them. You're saying, oh, it's medieval. I think they'll reskin it. I think they'll take the rules and they'll just say, all right, let's just put kind of a cyberpunk skin on this. Okay, let's do that.
Rules are the same,
just maybe some of the terms change.
I've thought about that. I don't think that would fly. I just don't think it works. I don't think it will fly. I think it's a fair thought, and God knows I wouldn't put it past Hasbro. If your point, like, if you're making a, like, listen, how do we just make money right now and say fuck them? Not saying if there's any company that would do that, it's Hasbro. Okay, we can agree on that. But I could just see them having their brain trust, their people who hack this shit out, transition from a whole new model, sell a bunch of books, profit model, to one that's all digital, is a licensed print money. None of this publishing and paper and ink and shipping and marketing. Just a fucking web thing that rolls in fucking money, and you update it occasionally, like Payday 2 for like 15 years, right? Like, they made Payday 2, the video game. They made a few, they would come out with some new guns, some new melee weapons, a new level or two, and charge $10. And it was all the same base code. You have the base product. You're doing a small amount of work that plugs into this larger built established code base and making a shit ton of money. Then what I think they're going to do is just transition over to something like a cyberpunk game. I don't think it'll be reskinned D&D, but they'll have all this code that makes things like character generation and adding up all the numbers and printing out a character sheet and having a virtual tabletop and having map. I think they're going to, it would free them up to be able to share a lot of the underlying assets in the same way you have, like, what would be an example, like Toyota and Lexus. They're like the same car, it's the same engine, but one has nicer seats and nicer entertainment systems. I think they're gonna, like, take the same engine that powers the fundamental numbers of D&D and then use it to create things like a cyberpunk game.
That's what I just said.
But
they'll
not
take the
re-skin.
Fundamental rules, and they'll just reskin it to different games, different genres of games.
I don't think they'll take Fireball and reskin it as a bazooka. I think it'll be totally different rule set, but, like, the engine won't care.
Okay.
But there you go. So that's my tinfoil hat level two, is that this is an attempt to, like, once we have built the way to, like, win people over D&D and they love our ecosystem, now we're gonna come out with the other side of the coin, right? We've got the medieval tabletop fantasy. Now let's go to cyber. That, like, the polar opposite to me is cyberpunk. That's, like, to me, what I view as the as far away in the narrative space as possible.
Well, I mean, I do agree they are going to go to an all digital. I've said ages ago that they're going to go to a subscription model and enjoy paying for that every month. And that's what they're going to end up doing. I think they're trying to open it up to be attractive to everyone, and I do see it in the future being the one system you need, and you can play any kind of game with it. That's it.
Yep. I expect them, this is not about D&D 1, but, you know, specifically, I expect them to reach out to children more. I was very impressed by a lot of their materials for younger people when I was trying to do class last year. I feel like they could have done better, but I feel like they will. I mean, they're trying to reach out to schools. They want there to be D&D clubs. They want to get them when they're young. Mm-hmm. They want them buying Hasbro shit, WOTC shit at 5, 6, 7, 8. Those are gifts. They come in, and here's your starter kit. Here's your beginning thing. I don't know how they're going to get that for digital. It's a little harder, in my opinion. But I think they're going to figure it out, and you'll see a push for that. But I don't think they're going to do it until they have one complete. Because the whole point is they want you in their ecosystem. They want you in the walled garden of D&D Beyond. They want to make it to where in all RPGs right now, you crack open your book and you follow like a fucking taxes thing where it's like, go to box 10, add up boxes 12 and 15 to get your attack score and then get your dexterity. Like, it's like GURPS or some other nightmare system. I think they're going to make that, like, they want to spoil you with D&D Beyond. Click, 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 new character. Where that's so convenient and so wonderful that no one will ever do that again. No one will sit down with a book and a pencil and start figuring out what this core stat plus this core stat divided by that core stat equals their concentration amount. Like, that's over. I think they're trying to make that untenable because they're the only ones who will have that tech.
Yeah. That's a good review. Thank you. I think we covered a lot. It was two parts. Yeah, no, big changes coming. Like I said, I agree it's going to go all digital. We're going to see more changes, I'm sure, as we move forward. And I'm interested to see what some other games are going to do in response to the changes that D&D has made.
Ooh, you have any thoughts on that? Are you just going to leave us on a cliffhanger? Now.
Cliffhanger. All right. Say goodnight, God.
Good night.
Good night.